All right, good morning, everybody. It's our privilege to have Pastor Steve join us and impart on leadership. Can we give him a big hand? He just arrived yesterday, so a little more enthusiasm to help with the jet lag. All right, so Pastor Steve.
All right, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Okay, I was just looking at the clock. I heard being on time is sort of a big deal around here with Paul. So nobody's late. I might just come late in the next session just to see what happens. Really good to see everybody and glad to be back. Wow, there's not many men in here. Not sure what that was. Oh, okay. I didn't. Gotcha. Okay, I didn't see 300. Yeah. All right. As Carlos said, I arrived the night before last and may not be fully here mentally today, which is probably not that out of the ordinary for me. I was asked to talk about leadership to admin staff. Let me just look around and see who we have here. How many of you work for a church? For a church, okay. Everybody else is working for every nation here. Okay. All right, good. We were, a few of us, before my last trip, I guess a month ago, 5 weeks ago, we had a what do we call that, Carlos? A staff, strategic planning summit in Alabang, and it was a few of our senior pastors and many of our apostolic team and a few of their wives, and all in all about 25 people, various positions in the organization, not all senior pastors, not all of any position, but trying to get a crossover. And we met to try to figure out how to upgrade and accelerate our leadership development at all levels of the organization. The reason we had that somewhat of an emergency meeting was because our ministry across the board, whether it's our church planting, the size of the churches, our campus ministry, our missions, our short-term missions teams, any area of the ministry you look at, we are growing rather explosively, but our leadership development has not kept pace with our growth. And so what happens when there's a ministry anointing that causes a ministry to grow, but if we don't simultaneously develop the leadership muscles, then we grow to an unhealthy place and things really spin out of control, and there's a lot of pressure and a lot of stress that might come down on a lot of you guys. And so I think we came up with some really good ideas and a good direction. And I was asked to speak at the beginning of that to kind of lay a framework. And here's a little bit what I said. When we started this ministry a long time ago, 1984, when you plant a church, oftentimes the church planter's personal calling and the ministry vision and values are kind of all the same, because there's really nobody else having input into the mix. That evolves in time, but in the very beginning, and some of you have heard this story, but I sat down at Dunkin' Donuts trying to figure out what this church would be and set the direction. I wrote down on a Dunkin' Donuts napkin on Recto Avenue that this church exists to honor God, and also these other three phrases came up: making disciples, training leaders, and the word was taking dominion. And those three phrases were written down, and for about a couple of years, that served us as sort of a guiding principle of what we were doing. But soon after that, my friend Emmanuel Canastracy was in town, and during a conference, he leaned over, it said, making disciples, training leaders, and taking dominion, and then he leaned over on a brochure we had, and during the worship, he got his pen and he scratched out the word taking dominion and he wrote Planting Churches. Up until that point, we had planted a few churches, but it was not really our passion. Making disciples, training leaders, that was our passion. Taking dominion was a little bit, not really even sure what we meant by that, but it sounded good at the time. But when he wrote down the words, planting churches, I just kind of went, okay. And from then on, that's what we said. But once we started saying that and printing that everywhere, an amazing thing happened. Suddenly, church planting became a core part of what we were doing. Suddenly, people wanted to go plant churches. It didn't really take a lot of energy. It didn't take a lot of coercion. It didn't take a lot of work. People started lining up and signing up and going, and churches began to be planted aggressively. So since that time, we have continued to bang those drums, making disciples, training leaders, planting churches, until recently. A few years ago, let me say this from the beginning, I don't ever regret getting input from next generation leaders, from young people. But sometimes getting input and actually doing it are two different things. And a number of years ago, I started hearing a chorus of loud voices from the younger generation. And we will not mention any names to protect the guilty today. And they did not like the idea of training leaders. They felt like their generation didn't respond the concept of leadership, and they wanted to be more egalitarian, they wanted to be less aggressive, and they wanted to be more team-oriented, and there were a lot of things, and there were a lot of reasons why about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, the phrase leadership was not something they liked. And so usually I'm glad to listen and respond. This time I listened and responded, and I look back now and realize it was a mistake. And so for probably the last 5-6 years, we have not talked about leadership much. Now, in the early days, one of the first things we did when we started the church, our church was called Maranatha then. We started this thing called MLTI, Maranatha Leadership Training Institute. How many of you are graduates from MLTI? Okay, only Pinky. Okay, one of the last of the Mohicans. That's where I met Pastor Luther. Luther Mancow was a Southern Baptist pastor in the U-Belt, and he enrolled his staff in our school. His staff consisted of Ruel, Ed T., Robert Hearn, who was about, I think he weighed about 90 pounds. He looked like that microphone stand with a wig at the time, and there was someone else, I forget who it was, and they all came through our Leadership Institute, and then eventually Luther joined that Leadership Institute, and God really connected us, and we merged our churches. After that, this building initially was called VLI, Victory Leadership Institute. We had a thing called a Leadership Lab, where periodically we had these leadership meetings and training. We had a summer staff intern program years ago. I wrote a thing called a Leader Letter. My blog was called Reluctant Leader. That leadership word was all over the place here. But then by listening to some of these people who didn't like that, they knew they were called to be leaders, but they felt we needed to rephrase it. And so we just stopped talking about it. And I think as our church continued to grow and we talked less and less about leadership, we started having a problem. The growth chart was going up. The development of leaders plateaued and kind of flatlined, and it created a lot of stress on a lot of people. And we are back now unashamedly pounding the leadership drum, and I'll explain what we mean by that. So the first session I want to talk about this morning, we have three sessions. The first one is the need for administrative leadership, and I want to look particularly in the early church in the book of Acts, the need for admin leadership. Second session, I want to talk about how to think like a leader, and I'll give you four points to think correctly about leadership, and then the third session will be how to act like a leader, and there will be three components to that, how to act like a leader. So the importance of admin leadership, how to think like a leader, and how to act like a leader. That's where we're going this morning. And if at any point you have a question, feel free to interrupt me. And then we'll go, normally this goes till 9:30, and then there's small group discussion and then Q&A. All right, we'll try to stick with that. Yeah. All right, Acts chapter 6, verse 1 through 8. And I want to look at this from a very specific angle of admin leadership, which is what all of you are. I want to just read through this and give a few comments. I think our meeting in Alabang last month or 6 weeks ago, when I was here on my last trip, I really do think we came out with an excellent leadership training process, the same way we worked for years to come up with a way. I think if you ask anybody in the Victory or the Every Nation Philippines world, how do you make disciples? Everybody's pretty much on the same page if you engage the unchurched, de-churched, anti-churched, lost people with the goal of preaching the gospel. Then you establish biblical foundations, and then you begin equipping every person to do ministry. Then you empower them to make disciples. So I think we're really clear on that. But when how someone becomes a leader, we're not so clear. It's kind of like this magical thing. So that's what we tried to dissect. What have we done that effectively trained leaders? And how do we build that into a clear process? And we'll unveil that increasingly as next year unfolds. But I think we've really got a good handle on something there. So let's look at Acts chapter 6, verse 1. It says, in those days, the number of disciples was increasing. That, if there's any verse that describes us, it's that one. We are increasing. And I know some of you may not get the significance of it. Maybe this is the only church you've ever been in, but we've been growing at about a 20% clip per year for over 10 years, which means every 3 years we triple in size. I mean, we double in size every 3 years. There are very few churches that I've ever seen that are growing this rapidly. And so we're thankful. It's the blessing of God. It's certainly not our, we're certainly not more pious or better Christians than the guy down the road. And we're certainly not smarter than somebody else. It's just a matter of momentum that's happened. How many of you read that? What was the book? Started off about the hockey players all being born in January and February, Outliers. Okay. I never read the book because everybody talked about it so much. I feel like I've read it. So I confess I didn't buy it or read it. But I think the phenomenon of our church is kind of an outlier situation. When you look at the larger churches in this city, most of them started in the early 80s. In either 1980, 1982, or 1984. JLL, Bread of Life, CCF, GCF, many of the larger, more influential churches started within about a five-year span. And we happened to land here at that time when there was a lot of political unrest. It was being in the right place at the right time. Which is always, it's always good when you look back and realize that unbeknownst to you, God was doing something significant and you stumble into it. So I look back at that. There was a season of time when a lot of churches were started here and they have grown large over time and many of them very influential. I don't know that in the ensuing years, if you picked any other about a five-year period, I don't know if you would see the same thing. We could be a chapter, not us, Victory, but the evangelical churches in the Philippines could probably have its own outlier chapter, and somebody could figure out why, what was happening here at the time, and why did so many churches that ended up being large and influential come out of that same time period, and not 10 years before, and not 10 years after. Not that there aren't any significant churches that have come after that. There are. There are a lot of great churches. But there was a season there when there was something special happening. And so anyway, In those days, the number of disciples was increasing. That is certainly us. And so look what happened because of the growth. You've heard the phrase growing pains. Well, this is it. The Grecian Jews, among them, complained against the Hebraic Jews because their widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of the food. What happens with a growing ministry, the more it grows, the more complaints there are. And that's just a fact of life. And I think as leaders, and I really want to address you as leaders in an administrative role, how do you deal with complaints? Not do you complain, I'm sure you do, we all do. But how do you complain and how do you deal with complaints in your midst? And so do you get offended and take personally every time someone complains about something about your leadership and something under your leadership? If you do, you're not going to last very long in this because the more growth, the more complaints. The fact is, many complaints are rooted in reality. It's not just a bad attitude. It's not just a bad spirit. There was something that was wrong. There was a real problem. Just because someone complains with a bad attitude does not mean the problem's not real, and it doesn't mean the problem doesn't need to be dealt with. So I think if we react in hypersensitivity and insecurity, every time someone brings a problem up, we get offended and mad, and we call it rebellion. That's horrible leadership. In fact, that's not leadership. That's just insecure manipulation. But these guys, there were complaints coming up, and there was a legitimate problem. Now, sometimes there are complaints, and it is totally attitudinal. There's not really a problem. But most of the time, they're rooted. They're coming out of something that's real, and it needs to be changed. And oftentimes, unfortunately, we don't realize something needs to be changed until the complaints start. So think about it right now in your world. And whatever the circle of world you operate in, I imagine if you will put your ear to the ground, okay, you ever seen those old cowboy and Indian movies, and for some reason Indians could put their ear to the ground and figure out what was going on hundreds of miles away. Ask Varsha sometimes if that really works. So if your ear's to the ground, you will hear complaints. If you think everything's going great, you're living in a bubble of unreality. Because look, when a ministry's growing, everything can't always be going great. There are some complaints somewhere, and some of those are legitimate, and they need to be taken care of. Pain in your body is sending a message. Something's wrong. Something needs to change. And that's what complaints are in the body of Christ. Even if they come with a bad attitude. So here's how they handled it. The apostles, as the leaders of that, when these complaints came because they were being overlooked, we'll see how they handled it. But point number one from verse number one, we're going to look at eight verses and there are 8 points. Point number one, growth demands more leaders, especially admin leaders. The growth, their response was not, we need more apostles. The response was not, we need more pastors, we need more teachers, we need more evangelists. The point when the complaints came up, they realized what we need are some people who do what all of you in this room do. Growth has demanded that we find and mobilize some people with some administrative skills, some administrative leaders. Okay, verse number two. So the 12 gathered all the disciples together and said, it would not be right for us to neglect the ministry of the word in order to wait on tables. Point number two, it's never right to neglect God's word. If you're a leader and you are in a circle of leadership somewhere, then don't neglect God's word. Verse three, brothers, choose 7 men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will turn this responsibility over to them. Point number three from verse three, good leaders empower others. If you want to be a good leader, you have to learn to not micromanage and control everything. You have to learn to empower. And he said, we will turn responsibility over to them. The apostolic team empowered others to empower new leaders. So he said, look, you guys go pick some people. They were empowered to pick the people. But once they were picked, the apostolic leader said, we will turn the responsibility over to them. Notice the apostolic leaders didn't pick all the people. And if you're going to be a leader and the organization grows, there will come a point where you don't really know everybody that's doing everything, but you have to have trust in the system, and you have to have trust in the people who are doing the picking. Years ago, that was a scary thing for me. In the early days, all of the staff were people that I led to Christ. I prayed for them to be filled with the Holy Spirit. I baptized them, did their weddings, and, you know, counseled their marriage, and that I knew them. And so I was comfortable with all of them. But then we grew to a point where suddenly there were people being paid to be pastors in different positions, and I didn't even know their name. And I had to quickly get used to that. Otherwise, if I had stayed in a tight circle where I had to know everything going on, I could have stopped the growth of this ministry. I didn't cause the growth, God did, but I could have stopped it. And I think that's a principle of church and ministry. We don't cause things to grow. Only God gives the increase. We plant, we water, we sow, we try to be faithful the best we can. God gives the increase. But we can do things, and I think ministries do it all over the world, to stop what God's doing. And I think one of those is a controlling leadership style. We either will lead for growth or we will lead for control. And often the two are not compatible. So good leaders empower others. They don't do it all themselves, and they don't try to control everything. Verse 4, and we will give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the word. There that thing comes up again, the word. Point number 4, empowering administrative leaders enables apostles to focus on the word and prayer. I said earlier, nobody should neglect the word. But this one is a little more specific here, this point in verse 4. Because they empowered some administrative leaders, they were then able to focus more on prayer and the ministry of the word. Prayer was their own personal relationship with the Lord. Ministry of the word was something more public. And I want to, on behalf of every pastor, evangelist, apostle, and whoever else you might work for, for every one of you, I want to say thank you for what you do that enables your pastor to focus more on prayer and the ministry of the word. Now, if your pastor, because of the job you do, focuses more on his Angry Bird scores, then we have a problem. But your role enables your pastors and other apostolic and pastoral leaders to do what this says, and I'm very grateful for people like you. Not that you should neglect the word, you shouldn't, but you're enabling them to do focus more. Verse 5, this proposal pleased the whole group. And you know what? The whole group is usually happy when administrative leaders are empowered. That's point number 5. The whole group is happy. The more administrative leaders we have, the happier people will be. How many of you want to be in a happy ministry? People to be pleased rather than frustrated. Well, we have to multiply you. And so what we're talking about here today is extremely important, that you, in your administrative role, learn how to think like a leader and act like a leader so that we can multiply more leaders in the areas where you serve. Because when we look at our organization, yes, we need more kids pastors, we need more campus missionaries, we need more lead pastors and more discipleship pastors and all that. But you know, honestly, that's the easy part. We could plant, if it was only about preachers, we have figured out how to multiply preachers. It's pretty easy. Well, not easy, but at least we figured out how to do it, and I think we're doing a good job of it. But what slows us down is not the lack of pastors. And it's not the lack of money, because every time we've taken a step of faith, God meets us there financially. Not that we have piles of money sitting around somewhere, but we've just learned that if we launch out to a new venture, God always meets us there financially. But what slows us down more than anything else are the supportive leadership roles like you're in. And this is one of the places where we have not kept our foot on the accelerator. And that's what we're trying to do, is figure out how to do that better and multiply more of what you do, or clone you, okay? So verse 5, this proposal pleased the whole group. They chose Stephen, a man full of faith and of the Holy Spirit, and also Philip, Prochorus, Nicanor, Timon, Parmenas, and all these guys. Timon went on to be a big movie star. So the point is this, point number five, the whole group is happy when administrative leaders are empowered. The less administrative leaders we have, the more the people are frustrated and the more complaints we have. The more we multiply and empower people like you, the less complaints and the more fulfilling. Verse 7, so the word of God spread. The number of disciples in Jerusalem increased rapidly. Notice the word of God spread, not because there were more preachers, because now there were more leaders doing admin roles, and that enabled the word to spread. Before, the people who were out spreading the word weren't able to because they were doing other things that they really weren't very good at. A lot of pastors think they're good at everything, because in a church plant, you have to do everything. But as the church grows, you realize, if you're a smart pastor, that I wasn't very good at that anyway. There are people who are a lot better at that than I am. Fortunately, we have pastors who are secure. There are a lot of insecure pastors around the world who think they're the best at everything they do, and they're really not. They were just the first ones there doing it. That's why they're doing it. But they're not very good at a lot of it. But this right here, they found out when they multiplied the administrative leaders, the word spread. The number of disciples in Jerusalem increased rapidly, and a large number of priests became obedient to the faith. Point number 7, empowering administrative leaders is a catalyst for growth. Point 6, did I skip 6? Okay, verse 6 does come before verse 7, doesn't it? Just having a jet lag moment. Verse 6, they presented these men to the apostles, who prayed and laid hands on them. Point 6 is this, the admin leaders recognized the authority of the apostolic leaders. And I think that's important. It says that they were empowered to go pick, but then they had the apostolic team lay hands on them. And I think it is a recognition of authority. If you're going to have authority, then you have to recognize whatever authority is in your life. Even though the apostolic team did not personally pick the new leaders, the authority of the apostolic team was recognized by all. Okay, then point number 7 is empowering admin leaders is a catalyst for more growth. As soon as they empowered these people, the word spread more, and they used words like rapid, and it was a pretty amazing thing that happened. And then verse 8. Now Stephen, a man full of God's grace and power, Stephen was one of those 7 that they empowered to wait on the tables, to feed the widows, to do the social responsibility work that the church had to do in order to represent Christ. It says, Stephen, a man full of God's grace and power, did great wonders and miraculous signs among the people. For some, here's point number 8. For some, admin leadership position is the starting point for other ministry opportunities. Not for everyone. So out of those 7, that's what happened to Stephen. Maybe the 6 others continued on. Well, Philip was in there too, but who became a mighty evangelist. But the others, maybe they continued with that. So I don't want you to see what you're doing as a stepping stone for something else. But there are times when this is part of God's process. Not that you go on to something that's greater. It's only greater if it's what God's called you to do. It doesn't mean it's greater than what someone else. It's what you need to do is what's the greatest thing God has you doing, and that is whatever He's designed you for. And whatever gifts and talents and strengths and all that He put in you, then that's what you need to do. Not looking for some hierarchical stepping stone. But the point is this, there are some people who start out in an admin role and God transitions them into something else. Maybe this was like Rico, okay? Rico started out as an administrator, a property administrator at our place at the Rock. And you know, I think he was just like Philip. Rico was horrible at that. It was one of the worst hires we've ever had. So one day we fired him, the next day we hired him as the youth pastor. And he did a great job at that. Maybe that's really what happened here. Maybe Stephen was just terrible at it, and so they promoted him. Okay, that's another word. That's a euphemism for firing someone. They promoted him. Okay, Stephen, maybe, you know, you're probably an evangelist. And then they're going, yeah, you're so disorganized, and you can't really get the job done. So Yeah, let's let him be a campus evangelist. So that's probably what happened there, if you read between the lines. So when I look back at how did Victory and what now Victory and Every Nation here, how did we develop so many leaders? And I think it is when people from the outside, and again, you guys don't have the vantage point I do of when we have guests coming in here, there are a couple of things they always notice. When they're local guests, people from outside of Victory, when they come to our church, typically for many years, one of their observations has always been that the mix of male and female, most churches in the Philippines are probably 70% female and 30% male. They're mostly, there's not a lot of men. That's not our case here. And so that's usually one observation people say. Now in this room, there's a lot more females. But in our church and most of what we do, that's usually a surprise to people. And that's been intentional and deliberate over the years. We felt like we had to make extra effort to reach men in this culture because the culture kind of says spirituality is a thing for women, but you know, men are going to be macho and irresponsibly spiritually. And so we've intentionally tried to build the kind of churches that men would feel comfortable in and feel welcome and not see it as something just for their wives and their mothers and their daughters. That's one observation. The other observation people make constantly is the leaders. And it's people who come here and visit, but it's also when our people go out from here to other places. Pastor Robert was stopped and preached in our church in Orlando and in Washington, D.C. on his recent trip in July to our North American conference. I received a phone call from our pastor in Orlando who said he was going to book a ticket here to come and shadow Robert for a week, because Robert preached in his church and then met with his leaders all day Monday, and this guy called me and said, this revolutionized our church. But I was kind of smiling on the phone thinking, yeah, Robert's great, but we probably have 50 pastors who could have done the same thing because they're all saying the same thing. It's any one of them could have done it. But what people from the outside look, and so that's not in any way to diminish Robert's leadership. He's a great leader and he's an amazing preacher. But I think we have a lot of, it's not just a flash in the pan, we have a lot of, and so people from the outside, when Joey or June or Robert, or I was hearing the same thing from Joseph and Carla's trip to South Africa. I was with our South African campus ministry director, he was in Nashville 2 weeks ago, Franz Olivier, and he was talking about the impartation and the time of having Joe there in South Africa, and I wish I could have recorded it for you guys to hear. You'd be proud of how people are received from here. But the question is always, where do we get all these leaders? Why do we have so many strong world-class leaders? I don't mean just preachers. We have a lot of great preachers, but leaders. And I think when we look at that, I've thought about several things, and I want to close with this, and then we'll... I think partially because from the very beginning, we shamelessly talked about leadership and we promoted it all the time. And we said from the beginning, our ministry was called, this goes back to 1984, we said we're called to reach future leaders. And I want to make a point of that. We were never called to reach leaders. That's never been our desire. We've always said we're here to reach future leaders. And what I mean by that, if I was here to reach leaders, I would probably not have been on a lot of the campuses I was on, because they were not known as hotbeds for future leaders or current leaders. But we were reaching future leaders. In other words, everybody we reached, we felt there was a seed of leadership that was just to be developed. And if you met most of the people you look at as powerful leaders today, if you met them when I did, you would scratch your head and think, was there really any potential there? It was pretty well hidden. But we're not a ministry that's reached or attracted leaders. We're a ministry that's been about future leaders, meaning wherever you are, whoever you are, we'll develop the leadership capacity you have. And all of us have a different start line for leadership, but we believe that whatever the starting point is, we can get you to the next level of leadership. That's always been our heart. And I think after about a six-year drought of not talking about it because of the mistake of listening to some young guns, now we're back banging that drum, even if they don't like it. We're ignoring what they said. Usually we listen and heed, but this time, no. Because I think we've got to get back to what God's called us to do, which is multiplying, making disciples and multiplying leaders. And all right, let's stop right there. And Carlos, do you want to take it from here, or everybody want to? Okay, why don't you get three of you would be good. Okay, however that works. If there's only two on your table, find someone else. But and then just talk about anything you learned right there, or any insight you had. Okay, let's talk about that for just a moment. Okay, last few seconds and wrap up. Okay, questions, comments? Start back there. Gans, your group. Any comment from back there? Okay, Jay, enlighten us.
Well, Ding was, I'm sorry, Dexter was asking, like, what was your question, bro? Okay, he was asking, did you ever think that you'll be, you'll stay long in the ministry,
if you never became a pastor and just continued to become an admin person, would that be okay or something like that? Because there's a notion, Pastor Steve, that when you work for church, the next big step is to become a pastor and all that. And so I threw the question to the team and asked, if you never had the chance to become a pastor and continue to be an admin person, what would you think, or how'd you take it, or, you know, that'd be.
So what's your answer? You asked Jay that? Jay, what's the answer?
Yeah. And I said that, in church, actually, a lot of people, the volunteers, actually put premium to the authority that the pastors exude. That's why we're not saying that they're looking at the admin people less, but they would really prefer to, you know, go to the pastors first, because after all, this is a church, so they tend to go to the pastors first. Or if they know that you are a pastor, they would want to go to you first and, you know, talk to you rather than to people
go to
from
you.
The
what
admin.
Do you mean go to you and
go
talk
to you for anything, you know? May that be any inquiry that they would want to ask, and even if it's administrative in nature, they would still want to go to a pastor rather than someone from admin.
So what's the answer to Dexter's question?
No.
Well, where I was coming from, I said, to pick up from where Pastor Jay was saying, there's the way, because I answered his question saying that it the work that we do, the fact that we are admin does not diminish the importance of what we do. And whether or not people have that impression of whether admin staff are any less important than pastors, that's their issue. We know that what we're doing is just as important. We do what we do specifically so that the pastors can, in fact, focus on the word and do their ministry. At the end of the day, however, let's say because Dexter was coming from the hierarchy perspective, where I was coming from is regardless of whether I'm doing admin work or whether I'm doing pastoral work, the point of as long as I'm doing my job well and I'm glorifying God in it, then that's it for me. If tomorrow I end up going back into the industry, that in itself is still glorifying God. But the context of where we are right now, whether we see ourselves in the ministry for a long period of time, I think will eventually depend on what season we're in and what frame of mind we're in. Yeah. I've been here for 4 years and I still can't get enough of it. So in that sense, where I am, I could be here forever. Could. But the perspective always is, I'm not going to put importance on the label that I'm just an admin staff.
And I think what Gan said there hits the heart of it. If somebody has a a non-biblical view of work and calling and ministry, then that's their problem. It shouldn't affect you. The problem comes if you have a non-biblical view. Because the fact is, from the text we just looked at, the church, the solution to the problems they had of complaints and the what would have stifled the growth, the solution was an admin solution, not another apostle. And so you are the solution, and more of you are the solution of where we are. Now, there's actually a trend in the States that might surprise you, and is a trend of senior pastors going from senior pastor to being executive pastors. Executive pastor is an admin role. It's defined differently in every church, but in the West, it's typically the chief administrator of the church. The executive pastor is not one who would do preaching, or he's basically the administrator, HR person, IT, and all of that in a church, typically in the States. That's the executive pastor role, and overseeing the finances and all that. But what's happening, there is a trend where pastors, mega churches are hiring, instead of hiring admin people, they're hiring former senior pastors of smaller churches. If a church has 10,000, really the best person to be the executive pastor is a guy who's been the pastor of a church of 500. Because a church of 500, typically the pastor does everything and knows everything. And so they get in that role. There are people who are realizing there's a call on their life, and they can impact more people by, in some ways, in a secular, worldly way of looking at it, taking a lesser role. I don't believe it's a lesser role. I think the lesser role any of us take is something that's different than what God's called us to do and different than what God's gifted us to do. But if you take the wrong mentality that you're pointing out, it's their problem if they think wrong. So if we want to think wrong about it, there are people who are taking a less title of senior pastor to become executive pastor, realizing they will have more impact by doing that. And so it is a trend that I hope will continue, and I hope it'll take off, because I look at a lot of larger churches in the West, and the bigger problem is not the pulpit. The bigger problem is what we're talking about here, and I think that's what stops the growth. And it's right what we're looking at in Acts 6. Great growth exposed a lot of lack of administration, and the solution was, let's empower administrative personnel, and then it caused even more growth. If they had not made that move, the growth would have probably plateaued. And so we're in one of those roles now that we are desperately need more people in the roles that you serve in, and we're hoping this will help you reproduce people who are in the functions you're in. And because of what those guys pointed out, and I think the reason in this nation there's that mentality, I think every nation has its challenges culturally. But I think here you've got to remember, we're most people here have grown up in a Catholic hierarchical context. And it's a very hierarchical view of religion. It's not a biblical view. There's some of the things in the Catholic Church that are great and you should be thankful for. But yet there's a view of a hierarchical thing, not a calling based, but this. And so I think we carry that over into the church. And so then people aspire to kind of climb that ladder, but the ladder doesn't exist, actually. It's just not the way it was. It's a calling and a gifting issue. It's not however high you climb on that pole, then that's the level of success you had. That's really not the way it works. Or it shouldn't work, but okay. Any other, back here.
Pastor Steve, this is more of a question, still related, somewhat related to the discussion. One challenge we've had is really attracting male administrative staff. But if I find it a bit odd, because in the corporate world, I think the statistics would just be right in the middle. There's as many male as there are females, but here it's a bit skewed. And I think it's because we are a church, and you know, the pastor thing, that the hierarchical thing. So I guess it's more of a question, like how could, because personally, I'd really like to see more males on all the admin teams, because you know, they bring a different, you know, gifting and perspective on things. But I guess it's a challenge, and we need to.
Do you know why that is? One, you pointed maybe they're aspiring to be pastors.
Yes.
Do you know any other reason why?
I don't know, maybe because we're all female, so we tend to attract females. I don't know. It's definitely not deliberate on our part. Actually, we're actually more looking like, you know, is there a male candidate for a position? But I don't know.
I wonder how much of it is money-driven, and even a lot of times things, people assume wrongly often that if I work for the church, then I won't make as much money if I will doing something else. And that's not always the right assumption. I know a lot of people out there, some of you may have sacrificed greatly to do what you're doing, but most people didn't. Most people who work in this organization didn't sacrifice anything when it came to their career and the amount of money they make and the benefits and all that. Some, Manny Carlos, probably people with an MBA from University of Virginia, probably are doing better than Manny, but most of the others, June Ferdy, and then roles that many of you are in, it's just not, that's not reality. But there is a mentality out there that I will make more money if I'm working in the corporate world than if I'm working at Victory or at Every Nation. And it's just, I wonder how much of it's that of men trying to provide for their families and thinking that's a better way to do it. And
yeah, so it's just a challenge that I'm bringing forth, and I guess a dream also that we would have like a more balanced mix in the future.
I don't know why it is, and it might be the kind of the Philippine matriarchal society, but it seems like, I hate to make a broad sweeping generalization, but gosh, it just seems like, but you're saying the corporate world is different, but in my experience here, all the years I've been here, with the exception of a few, Robert and a few others, most of the better admin people have been female. I don't know why, but with the exception of all you guys over here. Okay, last one, Dexter, and then we'll take a break.
Actually, I think I agree with Ms. Gigi when she mentioned that. I think sometimes the men, when they get an admin role here, it's either they don't want to take that or they see themselves becoming a pastor. So they can't really visualize themselves becoming a pastor full-time. And so they either just do small groups, victory groups instead, and just stay in the corporate world. I think that's a different mindset that I think a lot of men, we see that also in our church too. People say, no, they don't want to become a pastor and all that. So I think maybe that's it, Pastor Steve, that they see themselves becoming pastor and they can't visualize themselves because you're right again, financially, it's not that rewarding, I guess.
But I think the moment we buy into that, so because that's not true, that it's not, it can't be financial. They think that, but it's just not accurate. It's just not reality.
Pastor, one thing I was thinking of is it possible that the men see the admin function not as a leadership function? Not so much, because some of them don't aspire towards pastoral ministry. Some really just don't. But a support function, sometimes if it's treated like, you know how men are supposed to be the head and women are to be the helper, sometimes that kind of translates into this world where, okay, the headship role and then the support role. And since admin is seen as a support role, they automatically assume it's a female role sometimes. So like whenever I've talked to men who are really strong leaders in their world, when you talk to them in church administration, the idea of church administration, it's almost like they're not listening because it's a female that's a female function. So that's at least when I've talked to a few people, that's how I've experienced the perspective. It's not a leadership role. So I'm not sure where that plays.
Well, there's so many things wrong with that mentality, and I know you're just pointing it out. And the starting point is that the whole thing of help and support, that is only in the context of your own marriage. That's not a general thing for men and women outside of that. So the only, it doesn't even apply here. It has no bearing, but I know in people's mentality. Anyway, all right, got to take a break. It's 9:54. So at what does that mean? We come back at